And it is a good day. This is Rangers Radio for Wednesday, the 25th of June, 2014, and I am your host, Kevin. Sorry for the lack of shows lately. We've been lazy. That's pretty much it. No excuse other than laziness. So without further ado, let's get on into the news. In crypto news, to defeat encryption, Fez deploy the subpoena. This is from Ars Technica. It's not shadowy spies or engineers from the National Security Agency secretly reading the hundreds of tips about government fraud that the Project on Government Oversight, POGO, has received in less than a month. Instead, it's lawyers from the President Barack Obama administration employing the power of the administrative subpoena in a bid to siphon data from POGO's encrypted submission portal. POGO's site encourages whistleblowers to use Tor as the gateway and has garnered more than 700 tips about abuse and mismanagement at the US Veterans Administration after less than a month of operation. If they are successful, that defeats the purpose of trying to improve our online security with encryption, Joel Newman, the project's communication director, said in a Tell 1 interview. The administrative subpoena, which does not require the Fourth Amendment standard of probable cause, I'll say it again, does not require the Fourth Amendment standard of probable cause, comes as the number of so-called drop boxes from media organizations and other whistleblower groups is on the rise in the wake of the Edward Snowden revelations. The Washington Post and The Guardian were among the latest to deploy drop boxes on June the 5th, but no matter how securely encrypted the boxes might be, subpoena is an old-school cracking tool that doesn't require any electronic encryption methods. POGO launched its submission tool in the immediate aftermath of the disclosure of the Veterans Administration scandal, which on Monday blossomed to revelations that as many as 57,000 vets have been awaiting treatment for as long as 3 months each because of 1990s-era scheduling technology. Ouch. The agency is also accused of trying to cover that up. The subpoena from the Department of Veterans Affairs and Inspector General demands that POGO records related to wait times, access to care, and or patient scheduling issues at the Phoenix, Arizona VA healthcare system and any other VA medical facility. On Monday, POGO told the Obama administration that it would not comply with the subpoena. Most government agencies have such subpoena powers, and they have been doled out hundreds of thousands of times, all with the signature of federal officials as no judge is required. Bloody hell. The subpoenas demand that utilities, ISPs, telecommunication companies, banks, hospitals, and bookstores cough up information if the authorities deem it relevant to an investigation. Here's part of POGO's answer to the subpoena. Based on protections afforded by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, it is in the public interest that POGO protect its sources, methods, and unpublished information involving any matter related to any POGO investigation or sources, including our investigation in the Department of Veterans Affairs. The administrative subpoena served by the IG on POGO would infringe on POGO's freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of association rights as they relate to all whistleblowers and sources who come to POGO alleging improper administration of federal policies, programs, contracts, or spending. Moreover, complying with the administrative subpoena would undercut and harm the very purpose for which POGO was founded and functions. The group said in an email that 25% of the tips it had received come from current or former VA staffers. If the VA doesn't drop its subpoena, POGO said it would never turn the data over, even if ordered to by a judge. We are certainly prepared to go to court, Newman said. We are certainly prepared to go to jail to prevent any of that information being released. Now that is an organization with some balls, standing up to the federal government. Wow. This story is, there's a whole lot of weirdness going on here. Like, a minister's subpoenas don't require probable cause. Like, what? And they don't require a judge to sign off on them. So any federal person can basically go, give me your data. And if you refuse to comply, you go to jail. The land of the free? My arse. In flying car news, hover cars to be built in Tel Aviv. An elevated network of hover cars is to be built in Tel Aviv. Okay, so it's not quite flying cars. Sue me. A 500-meter loop will be built on the campus of Israel Aerospace Industries, IAI, followed by a commercial network according to Skytram, the company that will build it. Two-person vehicles will be suspended from elevated magnetic tracks as an alternative transport method to congested roads, the firm promised. The system should be up and running by the end of 2015. That's, like, a year and a half. That's pretty damn quick for this kind of thing. The firm hopes that the test track will prove that the technology works and lead to a commercial version of the network. The plan is to allow passengers to order a vehicle on their smartphone to meet them at a specific station and then head directly to their destination. It's kind of like the Uber system that's been deployed in London and all over America, but slightly more restrictive. The vehicles will achieve speeds of up to 70 kilometers an hour, 43 miles an hour, although the commercial rollout is expected to offer much faster vehicles. Hopefully they won't have any collisions, because that would be bad. A number of Skytran projects are planned globally, including in India and the US, but will depend on the success of the Israeli pilot. Skytran, based at the NASA Research Park in California, hopes to revolutionize public transport. Chief Executive Jerry Sanders described the agreement to build a test track with IAI as a breakthrough for the project. Joe Dignan, an independent smart city expert, said the system represented a hybrid between existing infrastructure and autonomous vehicles. It will get the market in the mood for autonomous vehicles. It's not too scary, it's cheaper than building a train line, and uses part of the urban landscape 20 feet above ground that currently isn't used. The only real question I have about this is it's built in Israel, and they're not exactly the most, you know, stable of countries, what with the whole Palestine thing going on. I don't know, an RPG hitting the track and a car coming along at 43 miles an hour, 20 feet up in the air. That could be a little bit expensive and deadly. But hopefully this actually does take off. So that'd be quite cool. 500 meters of track. That's half a kilometer. It's not insubstantial. In the half a year, a year and a half, that's pretty cool. I wonder if this would actually be good in more cities, like, say, London. That'd be really nice. Sort of like an overland kind of tram system, but less crowded. That'd be really cool. In prepper news, UK faces significant shortage of farmland by 2030. This is going to suck. Britain is running out of land for food and faces a potential shortfall of 2 million hectares by 2030, according to new research. This is from the BBC. The report from the University of Cambridge says the growing population plus the uses for land for energy crops are contributing to the gap. It criticises the government's lack of coherent vision on how to make the most of UK farmland. The authors warn that tough choices may need to be made on future land use. The total land area of the UK amounts to over 24 million hectares, with more than 75% of that used for farming. While self-sufficient in products like barley, wheat, milk, lamb and mutton, the UK still imports a large amount of fruit and vegetables and other farm products, including pork. Overall, the UK runs a food, feed and drink trade deficit of £18.6 billion. Wow, we're so dependent on other countries, it's unreal. With a population expected to exceed 70 million by 2030, the extra demand for living space and food will have a major impact on the way land is used, the report says. On top of these pressures, the government is committed to using bioenergy crops such as miscanthus? Yeah, miscanthus as renewable sources of energy, further limiting the stock of land for food. This is putting some very significant future pressures on how we use our land, said Andrew Montague Fuller, the report's lead author. If you look at the land that is required under some of the bioenergy projections made by the Department of Energy and Climate Change, that could potentially take some significant chunks of land. Another factor is the EU in the shape of the Common Agricultural Policy, which now requires farmers to put more land aside to protect nature. They are meeting one of the objectives, but maybe hurting some of our other objectives like growing more food and biomass-type crops, says Montague Fuller. The report estimates that all of these factors will require an extra 7 million hectares of land by 2030. However, there's a number of factors that will offset this, including reductions in the 19% of food and drink that were wasted in the UK. Wow, that's a lot of waste. Combined with increased yields and reduction in meat consumption will boost the land for farming, the authors say there is likely to be an overall 2 million hectare shortfall. The report highlights that the fact that there is a number of uncertainties about how the land will be used, and they point the finger at government for lack of coherent overall vision. What they are not doing is stepping back and looking at the overall direction and vision for future land use and making sure that all of these different policies all add up so that we are clear about what our demands are and where the land will be released from to meet those needs. The report has been produced by the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership in collaboration with the National Farmers Union and companies including Asda, Sainsbury's and Nestle. According to Dr. Andrea Graham from the NFU, the report highlighted some tough choices ahead. This report shows that agricultural land will need to be multifunctional, delivering a range of goods and services. We will need the full range of tools to meet future demand, employing to the very best technology and innovation to derive efficiency, quality, yields, and profitability. Andrew Montague Fuller says that there is a danger that the future farming landscape of Britain may not be compatible with the country's needs. We may well find out that there's a large amount of land growing biofuels, has solar panels and wind farms on it, when actually we need more land put aside for the food needs of our growing population. We may get the balance wrong if we don't face up to this shortfall. So yeah, this is kind of sucky. Basically, we've got a growing population and a limited amount of land. The UK, it's an island. We can't really, you know, make more land. We've got more people, we're going to need more food, more energy. We're kind of screwed. None of the solutions seem to be any good. I mean, if we stop having kids, that's very, 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 very unpopular. More energy means less food, or more food means less energy. How do we deal with this? No idea. I may emigrate. Next up. FAA bans the use of drones to deliver packages. The FAA made it plain this week that Amazon, or anyone else for this matter, won't be able to deliver packages using a drone in the near future. In a document soliciting feedback regarding drone policy, a notice of interpretation with the request for comment, the FAA calls delivering packages to people for a fee a non-hobby or recreation-based drone activity. As such, the FAA wants to ban it. So if you make money with drones, you can't do it. A recent court case set the FAA back regarding its wish to ban commercial drone usage in the United States. The agency is appealing that ruling. There might have been an Amazon loophole in the proposed rules, however. Amazon's Prime program provides free shipping to its subscribing customers, so it could get around the FAA's language due to its use of the word fee. Nope. A footnote to the delivery comment says the following, eliding the comment, the online retailer perfectly. If an individual offers free shipping in association with a purchase or other offer, FAA would construe the shipping to be in furtherance of a business purpose, and thus the operation would not fall within the statutory requirement of recreation or hobby purpose. Surprising? No. But it is almost fun to see the government so particular in its language. Any future Amazon fleet of drone carriers is likely far off from a technological standpoint, making the above perhaps effectively moot. By the time Amazon would be ready to deploy its drones, our legal code might have caught up to the technology it wants to use. As Ars Technica notes, Amazon was aware of the restrictions placed on its potential use of drones, with the company saying that putting Prime Air into commercial use will take some number of years as we advance the technology and wait for the necessary FAA rules and regulations. Correct. So yeah, the FAA are basically the kind of being dicks about this. You can't make money from drone deliveries. I'm wondering if this is something to do with the United States Postal Service. I know they are basically, you're not really allowed to operate your own postal service. You can be a courier, but you can't deliver mail. I'm wondering if this will have something to do with that. Amazon will basically be completely bypassing that whole industry, and they will not be happy about that. And my phone keeps going off, sorry about that. Next up. Federal judge rules US no-fly list violates the Constitution. This is from Reuters. The US government's no-fly list banning people accused of links to terrorism from commercial flights violates their constitutional rights because it gives them no meaningful way to contest that decision, a federal judge ruled on Tuesday. U.S. District Judge Anna Brown, ruling on a lawsuit filed in federal court in Oregon by 13 Muslim Americans who were branded with no-fly status, ordered the government to come up with new procedures that allow people in no-fly status to challenge that designation. The court concludes that international travel is not mere convenience or luxury in this modern world. Indeed, for many, international travel is a necessary aspect of liberties sacred to members of a free society, Brown wrote in her 65-page ruling. That's a lot of pages for a ruling. Accordingly, on this record, the court concludes plaintiff's inclusion on the no-fly list constitutes a significant deprivation of their liberty interests in international travel, Brown said. The decision hands a major victory to the 13 plaintiffs, four of them veterans of the US military, who deny they have links to terrorism and say they only learned of their no-fly status when they arrived at an airport and were blocked from boarding a flight. The American Civil Liberties Union, which brought suit against the policy in 2010, argues the secrecy surrounding the list and the lack of reasonable opportunity for plaintiffs to fight their replacement on it violates their constitutional rights to due process. For years, in the name of national security, the government has argued for blanket secrecy and judicial deference to its profoundly unfair no-fly list procedures, and those arguments have now been resoundingly rejected by the court. Hina Shamsi, the ACLU's Legal Security Project Director, said in a written statement. This excellent decision also benefits other people wrongly stuck on the no-fly list with the promise of a way out from a Kapila-esque bureaucracy, causing them no end of grief and hardships, Shamsi said. The government contends there is adequate means of contesting the flight ban and that individuals listed under the policy may ultimately petition a U.S. appeals court directly for relief. My arse. Attorneys for the U.S. Department of Justice, which defended the lawsuit, declined to comment, other than to say they need more time to read the ruling. The no-fly list, established in 2003 after the aftermath of the September 11, 2001 attacks, bars those on it from flying within the U.S. or to and from the country. As of last year, it included some 20,000 people deemed by the FBI as having, or reasonably suspected of having, ties to terrorism, an agency spokesman said at the time. About 500 of them were U.S. citizens. So hopefully, people on the no-fly list will be able to say, "Oi, why am I on this list?" and get them taken off. Which will be cool. I know there's some stupid things on the list, like babies on the no-fly list. How the hell are they even on there? They've got a similar name to a potential terrorist. Ugh, bloody America. Alright, in the hack of the day news, sorry, my phone keeps going off. It's really annoying. You'll all have heard about Google Glass, I'm sure. It's Google's headset thing, head-mounted display. People don't like them. Google Glass wearers have been dubbed as glass holes, simply for, you know, having the device. I'm not quite getting that myself. But anyway, somebody's come up with a nice script which finds Google Glass on a network and kicks it from the wireless network. Basically, it's a shell script. Uses the Aircrack NG suite of tools. Basically, what it does is it goes around in a loop and looks for Google Glass MAC address. It's a network identifier. The device. And if it finds one that matches the two in its list, it basically does a de-authentication against the device and kicks it from the network. This is basically so you can stop devices from streaming video or basically doing anything on the network. So I believe Google Glass is somewhat limited in what it can do. Most of its stuff needs the cloud. To function. It's kind of slightly dickish, but I can vaguely see what people, why you would want to do this. Still, it's kind of arsehole-y. What you could do with this script is, modify it slightly to kick off, I don't know, say, Apple devices or Android devices off your network. I should note that this is only legal to do if it's running on your network. If you're running this on someone else's network, you're a bit of a dick, and you're probably breaking the law. So next up, we've got a little bit of a rant based on Google Glass. Kind of ties into this whole thing. It's like people, they're concerned about privacy when it comes to Google Glass. The thing goes, it's like, you could be potentially being recorded at any time and you don't really know. I have accounted for this. You're being recorded anyway by the sheer number of security cameras that are about the place. Most of which are actually privately owned, at least in Britain. I think we touched on this story, touched on something similar a while back, like about 90% of the cameras in the UK are actually privately owned. So if you don't want to be recorded, you're kind of screwed, especially if you're in a city. Google Glass really doesn't impact on your privacy. The best you can do is basically tell them, don't record me. And hopefully they will respect that. If they don't, then, well, you can either get physical with them, in which case you're basically guilty of assault, or you can walk away. It's a social issue, I think. If you're in your own home, you can say no Google Glass, and people who want entry to your house, they must take the glass off. If you're in public, well, no, you're kind of screwed. People are concerned about, you know, being found doing things that they shouldn't be doing. Say, you know, you're skiving off work. To which I say, don't skive off work, you know. One of the Google folks said, basically, if you don't want to get caught doing something bad, don't do bad things. He was ridiculed for that, but he does have a point, you know. If you don't want to be found doing murder, don't murder people. You know? It's not exactly hard. Google Glass, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it. I can kind of see the use, but, I don't know. It's on sale in the UK now, or the lofty price of £1,000. I'm not going to bother, I don't think. So, to finish up, we're going to have a little bit of an audio track. We have a sports ball thing going on in Brazil, I believe. Something to do with balls and kicking, I don't know. So we have a little bit of a chap hop song. Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer with Let's Get This Over and Done With.